Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki. The chaste and very beautiful Sukanya could not distinguish her husband from the two Ashwini Kumaras, for they were equally beautiful. Not understanding who her real husband was, she took shelter of the Ashwini Kumaras. Purport. Sukanya could have selected any one of them as her husband, for one could not distinguish among them. But because she was chaste, she took shelter of the Ashwini Kumaras, so that they could inform her who her actual husband was. A chaste woman will never accept any man other than her husband, even if there be someone equally as handsome and qualified. Om Agyanachi Mirandashya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Chashmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, thank you for having me. I'm always happy to be here. You treat me very nicely, feed me and everything. Here we're dealing with the story of the marriage between Sukanya and Chavanamuni. And the story is that they're she sees Chavanamuni and he's doing tapasya because he wants to be young, he wants to be beautiful. And he's doing some very high grade tapasya. So he's basically just like in a hole and all you can see are these two glowing eyes. And Sukanya, out of curiosity, pokes him in the eyes, which of course is not so good. So her father gives her to Chavanamuni as a wife. Now, coming from the West, usually this is where kind of alarm bells start ringing, you know. It tastes a little bit like human trafficking or something, like you're giving another person in charity. But we have to understand that from the Vedic perspective, this is not how we look at things, because from the Vedic perspective, everything belongs to Krishna. There is no possession. We don't have any possession. So what is being given to Chavanamuni is actually the responsibility of taking care nicely for this wife. So in our part of the world, we hear a lot about freedom and rights. Is my right, human rights, and it's a free country, freedom of speech. All these things are mantras that are being spoken in this part of the world. What is being neglected, however, is the flip side of that coin, which means responsibility. We never hear of responsibility of speech. Rather, freedom of speech is used as an excuse to say any kind of nonsense, usually by some artist who can't come up with anything better than just provoking a certain group of people. And then freedom of speech. We need to have the debate. I have to be able to express something completely idiotic and respectless, because this is how we obtain our freedom. From the Vedic paradigm, we look at things differently. We see there are certain debates that are not actually necessary to have. And actually everybody can agree on this. Like, let's say, if I propose to a Westerner, let's have the debate whether or not democracy is a good idea. They would not want that debate. Or let's have the debate about freedom of speech. Should we have freedom of speech? Should anybody be allowed to say anything at any given time? That would be almost taboo to take that debate. Anyone knows that there is such a thing as proper and improper behavior. Like, I could be doing many things now that would be considered improper. I could say many things that would be considered improper, for that simple reason that a lot of devotees or people in general out on the internet, who knows, who's listening. So I have to take care, you know. I have responsibility of speech. And seeming paradox is that that actually is where freedom comes from. If you're able to deal nicely, then you will get a nice environment. And that is what freedom is, a nice environment, you know. Freedom means freedom from suffering. That's what we want. From the material perspective, and actually also from Chavanamuni's perspective here, it means I can control my surroundings, right? He wants to be young. Why does he want to be young? Because the young women, they like it, you know. So then I will be liked and it will be nice, you know. So if I can control my bodily situation, if I can control my situation around me, that will be nice for me. So he's put himself in the center. Now, this is a nice and special pastime, because actually what's going on here, he's being selfish and he's trying to become happy by use of his body. But what do you attract with your body? You attract the senses, because they are what is interacting with the body. So it's not actually very progressive in terms of spiritual advancement when we are attracting each other through making the body beautiful. Then that is where the consciousness will be directed. So it's not exactly very advanced. It's not exactly very spiritual. But what happens here is that he ends up with Sukanya, who's a very, very chaste woman and who doesn't actually care for that. She cares for her duties as a wife. And that is actually what will make the relationship work. Relationships are not about what will I get out of it. Then it's just a business transaction. You know, that's not actually a relationship. Relationship is what can I do for this person? So this is what we are trying to develop through our practice, this service attitude. Ultimately, of course, there is only Krishna to serve. And we can get into some more complicated or more developed rasas, like friendship and parental or something, but that doesn't matter. That will come on its own, as long as we focus on the main thing, which is servitorship, because then you have a relationship. A relationship only works if there is interaction. You know, there must be some kind of interaction for the relationship to be qualified. And that interaction will work on one of two premises. Either what can I get out of it, or what can the other person get out of it. You know, there must be some result, otherwise there will not be any activity. So that means it must be for either me or the other guy, or the other person. So when we are becoming Krishna conscious, we realize that all activities should be directed at Krishna, because that is actually how I become happy. Now, if it is directed at Krishna, obviously it is also directed at everything that is related to Krishna, all his creations. I mean, you guys, right? So this is how I serve Krishna, by serving you, because that's how he manifests to me. And we know also in a material relationship, if you're able to be selfless in it, then it works out. If you're nice to people, they will be nice to you. It's pretty standard, you know. See people who are extremely self-absorbed, extremely selfish and egotistic. They don't have nice relationships. They don't have a nice life. Now here's the trick, here's the illusion, is that they then become even more selfish. Because nobody else is taking care of number one, so I have to take care of number one. And it just becomes this downward spiral. Same goes for the other way. You know, the more generous you are, the more giving you are, the more attentive you are, the more you want to listen to others, the more others will come to you and they will like you and, you know, they will appreciate you. So even more you have to give. So for us to understand this, We must realize that we can't actually do this with our senses, because the senses just sense something and then they react to it. It's just a reaction. We have to apply intelligence, because when I'm getting bad results, it seems counterintuitive that I should then change my behavior to become more generous. People are not looking out for me, so I should be looking out for them. It seems like this is gonna be skewed, you know. I'm going to lose out here. But actually, that is what we need to do. So this, we need intelligence to do this. And this is why we're doing philosophy. But in order to do this, at least if we are preaching this, like now I'm preaching this, we need to develop relationships first. This is a personal philosophy. So that means it is based on relationships. In Scandinavia, where I'm from, I always like to bring up Scandinavia. It's like the counterpoint of Vedic culture. It's like Denmark or Norway or something like that. It's extremely impersonal because everybody is thinking about what can I get out of it. So that means we have to be efficient. So just a random example, like my bank. They're thinking, how do we maximize our profits? Well, we make it so that people can do everything on their own, on the internet. You know, I can go in and I can transfer money on my own and I can do this or I could do that. However, if it's not working, I have to call to my bank and figure out why it's not working. I have to speak with two computers first, and then I have to be on hold for 15 minutes, and then I get a hold of a guy who doesn't know what I'm talking about. He says to call another number the next day, and I'm on hold again for 15 minutes. It's very impersonal, and they're saving loads of money on it, but it doesn't make anyone happy, because if this is the similar mood that you're met with everywhere you go, like if you're in the shopping center or something, there's some item that you've chosen and the barcode doesn't go in, the guy behind the counter, he can't do anything. He has to call someone and it's a whole thing, and it's just, there's no personal interaction because the person you're talking to doesn't have anything to do actually with what is going on. They're just a little robot. Now, if you look at from the big business perspective, it saves money. But if you look at it from a human perspective, it also saves rasa. It kills rasa. It kills taste. The taste in the relationship dies because you can't actually have a real interaction with anyone. So that's why we propagate a personal philosophy. And that means that you have to actually be a friend to everybody that you're talking with. That's how you help anyone with anything. That's how you preach, is by being a friend. There was this guy, Assisi, who was sending some of his monks to a town, and he said, now you go there and you preach, and if it's necessary, you can also say something. Because preaching is not, we have this idea, preaching is something like this, you know, and I'm going to tell you everything and you just obey. No, it's not. Preaching is being acharya. Acharya means literally teaching by example. So this is why we wear these funky clothes and we go in the street and we do harinam. We're not talking, we're singing and we're preaching like that because people see us and they appreciate. We look happy, you know, and we're not drunk and we're very simple. And it's just, where do you see that except with us? You don't really see that. So it's attractive. It's just naturally attractive. So this is what preaching actually is. Then later we can talk something, you know, we can say whatever we want. But basically it's about creating a relationship. So that also means that we should be empathetic. It doesn't work if we just go to people and say, look, you're not the body, Prabhu. Get off the mental platform and do some service, you know, get out with some books. I mean, it doesn't work. It may work for a very short time. Most, they will just run away straight off. But we have to invite people in. We have to give them something. We have to help them add something to their life, not take something away. We're not taking away their material life. They can keep the job. They can keep the car, even the PlayStation. We're just adding a little calmness, a little peace of mind. Because if there's one thing that is lacking in the world today, it's peace of mind, you know. So that's what we're adding. And then later, maybe we add healthy lifestyle. So that means no intoxication, no meat eating. Maybe we add better relationships by not actually gambling or trying to cheat people. You know, so we're not taking these things away. We're adding the good effect that it brings afterwards. So in this way, we should be communicating, both with each other and with people outside, because that's what Prabhupada did. You know, he had unlimited love. We were just talking, was it yesterday, about this, these first recordings from Tompkins Square Park, where Prabhupada is doing Harinam back in the mid-60s. And he's sitting there, he's 70 years old, he's in America for the first time, alone, in New York, and you have these hippies dancing around him like crazy. And they're, you know, they have no idea what's going on. Half of them are on drugs, and they've got this long, greasy hair, and they're making out in the middle of the scene. And Prabhupada, he's just playing. You know, he's just playing. He's not judging. He's just playing. And then afterwards, he brought them back, you know, and gave them prasad and spoke a little, whatever they could deal with, you know, whatever was not too heavy for them. And that's how this whole movement was built. This is like becoming a world religion now. And we have centers all over the world. And that's how it was built. Through mercy, through love. Not through tattva, not through philosophy, not through superiority or cleanliness or steel sadhana. No, through love. You know, if you love God, you love all God's creatures. And that's Prabhupada. He loved all creatures. So this is the mood we're trying to develop. And this is, this is what, like, this ninth canto is, the main theme is liberation. And this is what will eventually liberate us. Because everything else is what we call sakam, with lust, with a personal objective or a motive. And this is what Chavanamuni is out to get here. He's trying to become beautiful because then everybody will like him. And finally, the final conclusion always is it doesn't work, because more just wants more. The senses are never satisfied, and as soon as the senses leave the sense object, the experience is over. With emotions, they can last a little longer because you can replay them in your mind and then retaste a little bit of it. If you're actually arranging your life according to Dharma, you will get some good results, which will make your life actually quite nice by material standards. But it doesn't really work out in the end anyway, because you will become detached, attached, of course. And anything material is temporary. It doesn't matter if it's a relationship or a car or a television program, whatever it is, it will end. It will all end. So if you're attached to it, you will suffer in the future. Now that's not what we're about. We're about eternal happiness. And that's the fun part about actually when we are able to separate love from lust. Because that's actually the confusion. That's the illusion that we're under. That lust is actually somehow love. I'm in love. No, nobody's in love. It doesn't exist. People can fall in lust. That's technically what it is, you know. They take all their hankerings and project it onto one person that suddenly becomes this perfect manifestation of all of it. But as we know, after 6 months, honeymoon's over and reality bites. And if you haven't done your astrology, sometimes it bites a lot, you know, and it bites hard. And then you have to deal with that, because you went into it thinking, what can I get out of it? And that will always bring pain. If you go into it thinking, how can I contribute? How can I serve in this capacity? Then it might work out. And that's why we're seeing here that Sukanya is doing pretty good, because she's not actually concerned about herself. So in our part of the world, this would be kind of provocative. Like she's being given like as a gift. And then, but that's because we have this, we have this idea of equality, being equality of the body. However, the problem is that the body of the man and the body of the woman, they don't actually function in the same way. Similarly, the subtle body of the man and the subtle body of the woman don't actually function in the same way. So because of so much feminism and stuff like that, we've now raised our girls to act similarly to men, because men should not dominate over them, and they shouldn't, of course. It comes from a nice sentiment, because nobody should be exploited, of course, but it would be better if the men just did not do the exploiting in the first place. Because what happens is when the woman takes over, her subtle body is not actually so equipped to deal with that. And it becomes a problem. What happens is that women have a tendency to identify with everything. Men have a tendency to identify with something specific. So that means the false ego or the identification of the woman is bigger than the man's, but the man's is stronger. Now, there are good things and bad things about each of them, but it just means that we have to deal with them differently if we want to get the best result. If you see a Formula One driver, his false ego is completely directed at getting this car around this bend. There's nothing else in existence. There is only the steering wheel, the car, the curb. That's it. And if another car comes, that may interfere, you know, but that's what he's dealing with. And that means it's a false ego, and it's a strong false ego, but it means he will be successful. So you can engage your false ego in service to Krishna, and then it will be effective. The female false ego works in a different way. She's identifying with everything that's going on. So that's why usually you would see a female living on her own. It's usually pretty nice. The drapes, and you got the matching china, and the table, and everything is nice and clean, and it's good, because otherwise she would get disturbed, because the false ego is identifying with everything that's going on. The man who lives alone, very different story. You got pizza boxes, old socks, you got magazines, everything's everywhere. And he really doesn't care. He actually doesn't even notice. Why? Because he's on the computer, you know. That's where his attention is directed. Everything doesn't exist. And that's also why it's intelligent for a young man to become a brahmachari. Because what you do is you just take all that crap he's not noticing anyway, and you just throw it out. And then you can have 20 young men living in the same room without any real problem. You try that with 20 women, you have a catfight in 30 seconds. Because where's everything going? Should we have these drapes, or what pictures should we have on the wall? It's going to be a whole trip, you know. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's just different. So if we know how to deal with it, we deal nicely. We get good results. If we don't know how to deal with it, we're going to have a bad time. It's as simple as that. So that's why feminism actually doesn't work. It's actually against women, because they're saying that the feminine nature is no good. You have to adopt the male nature, but you can't actually let go of the feminine nature. So now you have to do anything, everything. So we're limited, you know. We have a limited capacity. God is not, he's unlimited, great. We're limited. We only have so much we can focus on. So that's actually very unfair to the female gender, that they should be doing everything. We know from the Western world you have to have perfect kids, career, you have to look good, the home has to be like taking it out of a magazine. Nobody can do that. These people who do that, they don't exist. You know. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nandaki, Jai Sri Sri Ram Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanaki, Sri Goranikatayaki. So that is why we're proposing in the Vedic that we just do things simply. Because this is a material world. It's not meant for our enjoyment. Enjoyment only comes, in the true sense of the word, from spiritual enjoyment. I mean, there is only enjoyment in your consciousness. There is not enjoyment in your car. It doesn't matter how nice the car is. The car is not enjoyment. You have some idea of this car will make me popular, or it'll get me somewhere very fast, and that will generate some enjoyment in your consciousness. But it only happens in your consciousness. So we can actually arrange our life pretty much however we want, as long as we do it according to our nature. Now, you have masculine and feminine nature, that's one thing. But then you also have Varna nature. We have this concept called Varna Ashram, four Varnas and four Ashrams. Varna just means your occupation. You have to have a job so you can maintain yourself. You have four different types of nature. You have just a regular guy. You know, you have a job, you do your job, you go home, kiss the wife, Haribol. Then you have a businessman who is very into expansion and growth, and he wants to make things that are expanding, you know, like a businessman or a farmer. And then you have an administrator or like a leader type, you know. He wants to make things work and he wants to make sure everybody can do their thing properly. And then you have the intellectual. That's basically your four different types of mentalities that you have. So usually we say that the women are in their own category because naturally a woman is more dependent because this false ego is working like it is. So there's more use for some stability, some emotional support. But actually, you can look at it from a different angle, because if you see the Brahmana in the Varna category, what is exceptional about the Brahmana is that his occupation and his spiritual activity is the same. The others, they have a job, they maintain a job, and then they have a spiritual practice on the side. Or, of course, it should be dominating, but then the job should be supportive. But it's only indirectly spiritual. Whereas the Brahmana, his activities are spiritual. I mean, doing arati, or making sacrifices, preaching, giving classes. These things are brahminical activities, and they are also spiritual activities. So there is a complete seamless transition from his material life to a spiritual life. This makes it very simple. It's the same case for the woman, because her sphere of activity is the family and the home. If we take a career woman, mentally, that job and that career will be an expansion of the home. She is expanding her home into the career, and it may work very nicely because if she has employees, she treats them like family. You know, it has to be nice. Are you okay? And let's put a flower here and all that. It's nice. Whereas the man leader, he would be focusing on the bottom line, right? Are we making money? So it may work out. But anyways, the woman's world is, there is a seamless transition from the material to the spiritual, which is unique, except for the Brahmana. So as long as the man does his duty, instead of exploiting the woman, he looks at the relationship in a proper way and actually looks at it, what is my duty? How can I help this woman who is my wife to become self-realized? Then it will be very, very simple and easy for the woman to actually make spiritual progress. Whereas you see, like a businessman, he has to lie. I mean, there's no way, you cannot be a businessman if you don't lie. If someone wants to buy something from you and they ask you, how much did you pay for it? You can't tell the truth because you won't be making any money. So it's an embedded activity in Vaishya activity to actually lie. So you can later connect it to Krishna and then counter the effect, but it is confusing, you know. From a spiritual point of view, you would want to be honest, truthful, and all these nice qualities we know. So in that way, the woman actually can avoid a lot of these problems if the man does his duty. So that is what we're getting back to. We have to do our duty. That is our prime activity. You see that in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna surrenders to Krishna and says, look, this is not working out for me. What's going on here? Now, there's a preliminary explanation of what the Gita actually is. But then the next thing, what's the first activity Krishna propagates? Do your duty. Just do your duty. And that's what Sukanya does here. She just does her duty. And it's an amazing, liberating experience because you actually get good results from doing your duty. You don't have to hanker for, oh, am I getting mine or anything. If you just deal nicely, actually good results come. It's a leap of faith if you're attached to the lower modes of nature where you want to fight for it. And it's like the prize is sweeter if you've been fighting a lot for it, you know. I was speaking with one young lady I met in a train once, many years ago. And I was explaining about what it means to be a Hare Krishna and what's going on. And she was like, yeah, it makes sense. I get it. I can see what you mean. But I'm sorry, it's too easy. I can't accept it. It's just too easy. And she's attached to these lower modes of passion and ignorance, that it's like it has to be a fight, because then I've conquered and I've won, and that makes the prize sweeter. So if it comes that easy to us, she's not interested. You know, it's just not worth it. It's too easy to be worth it. So of course, that means we need purification in order to actually understand that you don't have to fight. There's no quality, there's no success in fighting on its own. It depends what you're fighting for, of course. Krishna said to Arjuna, fight, but that's for the right reasons. So the fighting in itself doesn't have any value. So we need purification. So how do you get that? Sukriti. Again, that's why we're on the street doing the Harinam. And that's why we have to be extremely merciful. Because actually, truth, what is truth? You know, you can take any fact, and you can take or any number of fact and combine them into some kind of theory. And then you can say this is a scientific theory because it's based on fact. I had a thesis, I've done the experiment, I got the result, this is science. But what facts did you choose? You can choose many facts. Any given moment is an unlimited amount of facts. And that's why these scientific theories rarely last very long, because then comes another generation of scientists. If they have to make career for themselves, they have to figure out something unique. So they have to kind of counter the old theories, and they do. Because there is an unlimited amount of facts, you just combine them in a different way and say, no, actually, it's like this. So that cannot be constituted as truth. That is not truth. Actually, there is only one truth, and that is Krishna, the supreme absolute truth. So if we want to be truthful and we want truth, we have to guide people towards Krishna. If we lead people towards Krishna, that is truth. That is real. So this is sometimes difficult. We have different types of people in different types of situations. We have those who are inimical, we have those we call innocent, and then we have those who are favorable. Those who are inimical is my experience personally. Just let them be, you know. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't really matter. Give them prasadam. That they have no defense mechanism against that. But other than that, never engage in debate. I inadvertently ended up in a debate with a physics professor recently. And he was telling me how he was scientific and I was not scientific. And I was telling him why it's actually the other way around. So I was saying that, well, you're basing your theories on some assumption that you can't actually justify. The assumption is that whatever I experience with my senses is the only way to obtain a realistic view of reality, you know, that this is the only way. But how will you test that in your laboratory? How will you test that statement? This is not a statement of science. This is a statement of philosophy. So where does that come from? Of course, he couldn't answer that. So what I said, no, what we're doing is scientific. What we're doing is we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're becoming self-realized. The thesis is that there is a higher reality based on consciousness beyond the dualities of the material world, where everybody can be happy eternally. We engaged in the experiment, which we have been giving from the Vedas, of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then we experience that we are actually, yes, experiencing this higher reality. It is similarly to if you eat, you feel full. It's an experiment. But pretty soon we realize that this experiment works every time. So it's scientific. The same way we're doing this, we're engaging in it, and we get the scientific result. Now he has to do the experiment for himself, because it's not an external experiment. It's an internal experiment. We are the instrument. There is no, you know, microscope or scale or anything. We are the instrument. Our consciousness is the result that we are obtaining. Now, when I said that to him, he looked at me a little bit and said, yes, but what about religious conflict? And this is what I mean. It has nothing to do with science. He just changed the topic. As soon as he couldn't get any further, play any more with it, he just completely changed the topic. So I gave him a biscuit, And he was very happy with it. And he went on his way. And this is actually the reality that this modern science, it's based on assumptions that have not been justified, that have not been qualified. This actually has, because literally billions of people, the last many thousands of years, have been using these exact texts to obtain self-realization. And they have all been successful, all of them. We have devotees who have left this movement, who have stopped chanting, but I have yet to hear one of them claim that it doesn't work. Even those who are not chanting anymore, who are leading, again, have fallen into the material life and all that, I've never heard anyone say it doesn't work. Quite the contrary, I'm pretty sure in the 80s we got sued by someone who left because she was unable to enjoy the material energy anymore. She actually sued ISKCON because she could not return, because she had gotten this higher taste and it was impossible for her to get anything from the material energy. So this is scientific. It works. It doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you are, doesn't matter when you are. It doesn't even matter if you believe it works. It works. So this is what we're propagating, and this is what we will be liberated by in the end. So I think I'll end now. If there are any questions or comments, chastisements...